9-19 are tied with the Mets for the worst record in the National League. Here is Phillies President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski, moments ago.
Well, this isn't a blame game. We collectively are not doing well. I don't think we're playing up to our capabilities. I think we're a much better club than we played. But I think at this time I felt that we needed a new voice in there, a little different feeling in the clubhouse at this point.
Bench coach Don Mattingly was named interim manager for the rest of the season. USA Today reported job was first offered to recently fired Red Sox manager Alex Cora, but he declined. In the NFL, the Baltimore Ravens are signing undrafted free agent quarterback Diego Pavia. Boston Celtics president of basketball operations Brad Stevens won the NBA's Executive of the Year award today for the second time in the last three seasons.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, the USDA is exploring a significant increase in its borrowing authority to strengthen financial support programs for farmers facing ongoing economic strains. Officials are considering raising the cap by as much as $30 billion. The proposal would allow USDA to expand lending and safety net programs, including those administered through the Farm Service Agency. Ag groups say additional flexibility could help stabilize farm income, particularly for small producers. Well, Congress is intensifying scrutiny of foreign ownership of U.S. farmland, citing concern about national security and control of the food supply. Recent discussions have focused particularly on investments tied to China, though officials note foreign entities from several countries hold American ag land. Lawmakers are considering new restrictions and enhancement reporting requirements to improve transparency around land purchases. Supporters say tighter oversight is needed to protect strategic assets and rural communities. Well, the NTCA, or Rural Broadband Association, is applauding congressional passage of the Rural Broadband Protection Act, which aims to strengthen oversight of providers seeking federal broadband funding. The measure, already approved by the Senate, now heads to the president's desk for final signature. The legislation would require more rigorous vetting of applicants to the Federal Communications Commission's high-cost Universal Service Fund program, ensuring recipients can deliver reliable service in rural areas.
Hello, everyone. Kyle Schaub inviting you to the Koenig Ranch Reds 17th annual production sale Thursday, May 7th at Glasgow Stockyards. 100% registered 1A Red Angus, range-developed birth to finish with herd building and stayability genetics that are second to none. Selling 42 two-year-old bulls from the top third of the crop and 30 registered open heifers. Consistent, reliable cattle. The Koenig Ranch Red Angus Sale, Thursday, May 7th, Glasgow, Montana. Bid live on Cattle USA.
Today, we're talking with aphids and whiteflies about Safina insecticide from BASF.
We just got nailed with it.
So tell us, how you feeling?
Really, really weird.
And you still want to devour this field?
No way, bro.
There you have it, folks. Safina insecticide is specifically engineered to disorient aphids and whiteflies so they can't eat. And when they can't eat, they can't destroy.
Help protect your alfalfa from aphids with Safina insecticide. Always read and follow label directions.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varley, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages are mixed in afternoon trading, with the tech-heavy Nasdaq losing steam on renewed concerns about artificial intelligence spending after the Wall Street Journal reported that OpenAI ChatGPT's parent missed internal targets for new users and revenue. Shares of companies in OpenAI's web of partners like NVIDIA, Oracle, CoreWeave, and Broadcom are falling. Investors are also digesting the latest crop of earnings reports. Tech is the worst-performing sector, while energy and consumer staples are gaining. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks are mostly lower ahead of key earnings reports on Wednesday. And shares of Kimberly-Clark are rising 1% after the maker of Kleenex tissues and Huggies diapers reported higher profit and rising sales in the first quarter due to product innovation and resilient consumer demand. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm Alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
There was another part to Mr. Brezhnev's recent speech on human rights that deserves more coverage than it received from our press. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
On March 21st, Soviet Communist Party Chief Leonid Brezhnev made a speech warning the President of the United States to lower his voice on the subject of human rights. He, of course, received worldwide coverage. Indeed, we could all be excused if we thought that's all he talked about. It wasn't. He had things to say about the Middle East, and frankly, if a man biting a dog is more newsworthy than a dog biting a man, then the world press missed the real news in his speech. In introducing the subject of the Middle East, Brezhnev sounded as if a reconvening of the Geneva Conference on the Arab-Israeli stalemate might be in order. Then, speaking for the Soviet Union, which co-chairs the Geneva Conference, he outlined what his country considers essential to a peaceful settlement between Arabs and Israelis. He said, quote, "We hold in particular that the final document should be based on the principle of, now hear this, the impermissibility of acquisition of territory by war," unquote. He then went on to say that Israel should withdraw her military forces from all the territory she took in the Six-Day War back in 1967, and, of course, return that territory to the Arabs. This, to be sure, is one of the bones of contention in the present stalemate, and could raise among us Americans a question of why not? After all, we fought two world wars, were victorious in both, and never asked for or took so much as a square inch of anyone else's territory. But we'd be pretty naive if we applied that yardstick to Israel in the present situation. The real issue in the Middle East had to do with the Arab refusal to recognize that Israel has a right to exist as a nation. To give up the buffer zones Israel took in the Six-Day War could be to put cannon on her front walk aimed at her front door by those who said she must be destroyed. But let's take a look at those other words of Mr. Brezhnev. He's telling us the Soviet Union does not believe any nation has the right to hold territory seized by force of arms. Well, let's play what if. What if the United States said to Israel, you give back that territory to your Arab neighbors, and we'll enter into a treaty with you, a mutual aid pact that says if you're attacked, we come to your aid. Don't go away. There's more to come if we're playing what if. Then we say to the Soviet Union, by way of Mr. Brezhnev, quote, you, of course, must get out of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, which you seized by force of arms, unquote. And come to think of it, that means turning loose Finland, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria, East Germany, and Romania. As a matter of fact, there are some islands north of Japan and some territory in Mongolia you occupy only because you joined the fight against Japan 20 minutes before the end of the war. I don't think they heard a single shot fired in anger. And up till then, Korea was one nation. It only became a North and South Korea because the Soviets came in like a squatter and homesteaded the North half. Unfortunately, that was during a time when we were in that good old Uncle Joe mood, thinking Stalin was going to turn out to be the gruff old codger with a heart of gold. How about that? One sentence by Brezhnev in a speech on March 21, 1977, and if everybody, especially him, did what he said, peace would come to the world. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Protecting what matters on the right choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday, it's 12:30. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our guests today are Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and Paul Sloan, the City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Paso Robles Space Sport Initiative, and really just to talk about what a great gem the Paso Robles Airport really is for this community. And then we're going to do an update on critical aspects of the strategic work plan implementation that I know Chris has been working with, and balancing economic development with North County rural sensibilities. Chris and Paul, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thanks, Barry. Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you back, and good to have you here for the first time, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you folks, you can call in or text with questions, and I can't imagine that many of you are not going to have questions for some of our guests today. You can call in or text at 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Paul, you're a newcomer, so we'll let you get up to bat first. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right, thanks. My name's Paul Sloan. Paso Robles is my hometown. Go Bearcats. My family has a small farm on the west side where I grew up, and I went to all the west side schools, Georgia Brown, Marie Bauer,
Wow. Back.
Paso High School when it was on 24th Street. And then after high school, I was off to college and life and a few other things. As an undergrad, I went to UC Davis. I studied biology. And I worked for the University of California for 4 years as a research diver based out of the Bodega Marine Lab up in Bodega Bay, north of San Francisco. And after that, I did 9 seasons as a scuba diving instructor in various exotic places, working for an international resort company called Club Med, which you may have heard of. After that, I came back to the States and I went to grad school, got a master's degree at the George Washington University School of Business in Washington, D.C., and I was working for Continental Airlines down in Los Angeles as their director of internet marketing for the Pacific and Central America and the Caribbean.
So that must have been when internet marketing was really in its infancy.
This was in the 90s. This was building up to the dot-com bubble. Yeah,
that was my airline of choice back then. I used to go between Denver and L.A.
Yep.
On the pub flight. On the DC-10 pub flights, those were the best.
Yeah. So I worked for them. I was based in L.A. Down in El Segundo is where a lot of, it's right next to LAX.
Right.
There's a lot of airline offices down there. And so there at the time, this is before they merged with United, but there was a big business complex called Continental Plaza. And it's where I was working. And as it happens, the National Tourism Office of Tahiti opened their North American office on the ground floor of our building, where my office was, and they heard that I'd lived in Tahiti for a couple of years when I worked for Club Med. So they said,
tough duty.
You got to do what you got to do. But they said, you must come work for us. And it was literally the same building, just a different floor. I said, that sounds like fun. So I became the director of marketing and promotions for North America for Tahiti for 7 years. Mm. And I had a team of 9 in that office. And then our son was born. My wife's from Tahiti. I met her when I was working down there. She's from the island where the resorts was located. So our son was born in L.A., and my wife said, I don't want him to grow up in L.A. She goes, I'd like him to grow up in the islands like I did, and there literally is no counter-argument to that. So we sold our house, and we moved to Tahiti, bought a piece of land, and built a little house on the beach with a lagoon in the front yard, and that's where our son grew up. And at that time, so I was working in the Tahiti Black Pearl industry, so I was doing marketing, business development for a couple high-end jewelry designers. And then it was great. I learned all about import-export of gold and diamonds and high-value goods. I really enjoyed it because I like learning new things. And then a colleague of mine, who's a phenomenal graphic designer, her name is Amandine Lenoir. Together, we launched our own marketing agency, and we're working with a wide range of businesses of all sizes, big companies and lots of mom-and-pops, which I really like working with. And so Amandine and I worked together for 7 years, and then in 2012, my father died, and so we came back to Paso to help my mom. She was, it was a tough time, and so we came back to help her out. And it was on the upside, my son got to go to Bauer Speck for third and fourth grade, and that's when he became fluent in English. His first language is French, and he got to be in Cub Scouts and be an American kid, so it was really, really good. The Tahitian government came back around, and they really wanted me to come back and be run their global operations, doing their marketing worldwide. And my mom was in a better place, and we'd sort of arranged everything. So in 2014, we moved back down to Tahiti, and I became the CEO for Tahiti's National Tourism Office with a team of 120. I ran the head office in Tahiti, and we had 14 international offices around the world. We had offices in London, in Paris, Milan, Madrid, Frankfurt, Tokyo, Shanghai, Seoul, Sydney, Auckland, Montreal, Toronto, LA, and Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Wow.
And then the Brazil office ran marketing in Argentina and Chile, and Germany ran the programs in Austria and Switzerland. So altogether, we were doing marketing and action promotions in 18 countries around the world. So
you never lacked for frequent flyer miles.
It was a horrendous amount of travel. It was a horrendous amount of travel. I still have miles that I haven't burned off.
I'll take them.
When you tell someone you had to go to Paris half a dozen times a year, you get no sympathy, but it's not as great as it sounds. But so we got to do it. It was an amazing experience, marketing a destination, doing workforce development and doing business attraction, and then working with all the local companies and businesses, from big brands like Four Seasons, St. Regis, all the way down to literally hundreds of mom and pops, which again I really love working with. And I a lot of travel. When I'd transit California, I'd go see my mom. And as the years passed, it was obviously getting tougher for her to be by herself. So it reached the point where she couldn't really live alone anymore, but she wanted to stay in the home that she'd known for so many years, where she raised her family. So I went to see the Minister of Tourism, and I said, we've got this just maxed out. You got your firing on all cylinders. We took a V8, made a V12, and it's just screaming. And I says, I think it's time for me to go home. And so we did that. And so we came back, and in 2020, moved back to Paso. And my son got to graduate from Paso High School, which makes me happy, Bearcat legacy. And I'm back living on the farm where I grew up, and I have the incredible honor to work for my hometown.
That's great. So you went from really serial entrepreneur to being a government employee.
Yeah.
What was that transition like?
Well, when I first came back here in Paso, the city had outsourced economic development to the Chamber of Commerce. And so I came in on the end of a three-year contract, and there was no one in the position. The Chamber hired me as soon as I got back. So I was at the Chamber for 6 months. And then when the contract expired, the city decided they wanted to bring it in-house. So I went through the application process, like everyone, and they hired me, and so I became a government employee back in July of 2020.
It's not a pejorative or anything, but, you know.
It depends on who you talk to.
All right. And Mr. Bosch, you are a regular here. Yes. And everybody knows you. Is there something you could tell us about you that we don't know?
I'm not even going to try to.
You just told me something, but I don't know if I could say it. You just told us something. You told me something.
Well, I came to Paso Robles in 1986. I had a one-year contract to fix a broken business, which I had been doing down in the L.A. area. I went to Cal Poly Pomona. and got connected with a guy that fixed bankrupt businesses, basically flipped them. And so we did that and learned how to run businesses, manage people. The opportunity to pass Robles was for a one-year contract. Decided love Paso Robles. It was 12,000 people back then. Downtown was boarded up.
What year was this again? I'm sorry.
86.
Okay.
And Norma was just starting to get going with Main Street. Fell in love with Paso. My family had a ranch in Coarse Gold, California. So very similar. But Paso was a little more progressive than Coarse Gold at that time. We raised five children here, five Bearcats. They all went off to great universities. I bought the business that I was sent here to fix, grew it from about six employees in one location to four locations, over 50 employees on the Central Coast. We sold that in about 2002. The earthquake hit 2003. I got involved with Mission San Miguel, trying to keep it from becoming a secular museum. We kept it a Catholic mission. That was very rewarding. And then I was asked to run for school board in 2012. I was told I couldn't win. I won by 13
votes.
That's
all they needed to tell you, though, right?
I was doing it to help somebody out. and then 10 years later, there was an opening when Maria Elena retired from the city council. And I was appointed for about 2 months to fill her spot. Got elected, and have been there for not quite 4 years now.
All right. Well, I'm glad to have both of you here. It's really great to have this kind of historical perspective on this town, you know, coming on the show. So, Paul, you know, one of the things that we were talking about before we went on air was that, you know, In my research, I never realized what a gem the Paso Robles Airport really is. And it's got quite a history. Why don't you share that with our audience that may not know about some of the highlights of it?
Sure. It is a gem, and it's people have said that for a very long time. For those who may or may not know the history of it, it's a former military air base. It was built in World War II. The city acquired it in 1973 for a dollar. Things were cheaper back in the 70s. Just for context, the San Luis Obispo Airport is 340 acres, and the Paso Robles Airport is 1,300 acres. We're a full four times bigger. Hmm. And out in SLO, they've got United and American and Alaska flying in and out of there. And we're four times bigger. We're just coming up on the finishing touches of an airport master plan update, which is something that hadn't been done in 20 years. So that'll be wrapping up the next couple of months. And one of the things that is, it's been a really great process to have the data really, you know, ink on paper, is that today, after 50 years as a general aviation airport, we're using 13.8% of our airfield capacity. Hmm. And the projections going forward, if we were to continue the same trend line, in 20 years from now, we'd be using just under 22%. So there'd still be 80% of the airfield 20 years from now that's not being used.
So totally underutilized.
Yeah, just lots of opportunities. So the idea is to build a future that keeps everything we have and allows it to grow, but then see how we can enhance our existing infrastructure to achieve the city leadership goals and things like that. And that's literally, it's everything we're doing. When you step back, it's really funny. We're just connecting dots that have always been there, whether it's with the, you know, the airport and city council goals and Cal Poly and Cuesta and the high school, all those things. So the airport is a huge opportunity for us. When people come here and they look at it, they're amazed at the abundance of big flat dirt. You just don't find that. And that's gold in its own way.
So, you know, I want you to unpack the master plan process a little bit. But one of the things that I picked up in reading about it was that there is no control tower at Paso Robles Airport, correct?
Yes.
So how do the planes figure it out when they're coming in and out for landing and takeoff?
They talk on the radio. They say, this is me. I'm coming in and it's my turn to go.
It's fairly typical of a general aviation airport. And I think that some of the reason why there's some skepticism, you know, from the piston jockeys about whether or not a spaceport is viable. It's an evolution. And maybe, Paul, you can talk about the airport master plan.
Yeah.
as opposed to the application for the spaceport.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, just last week we were having the fourth and final workshop on the airport master plan, and the discussion was on the question of a tower. Do we plan for it? Because the master plan is what's the airport look like for the next 20 years, basically. Mm-hmm. And the consultants doing it says until we reach airport operations, takeoff and landings of at least 100,000. Below that, the FAA doesn't consider it necessary for a tower. So there's, in our foreseeable future, we won't have a tower unless we do something with the military that wants to set up an operation. And that's, to Councilmember Bausch's point, it's why the pilots love it here. We have 320 days a year of beautiful skies, and you can do whatever you want, be safe, and all that things, but you can take off and land as much as you want. And so a third of the traffic right now, when you count the number of takeoffs and landings, is literally takeoff and landings touch and goes. It's flight schools. So a third of our traffic is not even people coming or going. It's just people practicing. And so that's, you know, it's just a great place where you can have those types of activities.
When they had commercial flights in and out of here back when, did they have a control tower?
No, we've never had a control
really?
Tower. Really? I'm not sure the GPS was a real thing back then either, like it is today.
Really?
There were some, from what the old timers tell me, there were some light towers off of Adelaide Road and beacons, and they would triangulate off of those.
Well, I can tell you, I connected from Chicago up to San Luis Obispo a couple weeks ago, coming into LAX, and the landing at LAX was amazingly scary because the guy was just about ready to touch down, and I guess he got called off, and I ended up running into the pilots, deadheading it into San Luis Obispo, and I didn't realize they were the pilots until I asked them, this just happened, what the heck happened? And they were gigging each other about they were coming in too hot. But yeah, then again, with all these near, you know, the accident they had at LaGuardia, and some other close calls recently, it's kind of scary to fly in and out of places.
And the biggest thing with the FAA is whatever type of license you have is it's safety. That's their biggest thing. Whether it's a general aviation airport or what they call a Part 139, which it has commercial flights, things like that, or eventually if we were to get a spaceport license. Number one is just safety about it. So,
all right. Well, we've got about another minute left here or two. So talk about the what the master plan process looks like and then where it goes from there.
With the airport?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a great, all the documents are online if people want to look at them at prb.airportstudy.net. And basically they do an inventory of what we have and then they do sort of projections and then they do what's called an airport layout plan where they map out what the airport could look like, you know, allowing for additional hangars and things like that for all the different types of operations, where we can have, in this case, eventual spaceport operations, how everything can live in a complementary fashion on the same landscape.
Yeah, well, so this spaceport thing has been in process for about 5 or 6 years now, right?
It was 5 years in February.
Why don't you give us the high-level crib notes in the next 15 seconds, and then we'll take it on the other side of the break.
Go, Paul, go.
Sure. City Council said we need to diversify the economy. We need to attract higher-paying household jobs. We need tech. Right then, Vandenberg became a Space Force base. Everyone's talking space. And Cal Poly says, hey, we do space. Let's get together.
Yeah. And that's how it all started.
That's how it all started.
All right. And we're getting to the point here where, I guess I got another minute. So where are we at? I mean, what is planned for the spaceport?
Spaceport is a license, and there's different kinds of licenses you get there. Today there are 14 commercial spaceports in the U.S., and to be a commercial spaceport, which is not Vandenberg. Vandenberg is military, and you get a license from the FAA, and you can be an airport and a spaceport, which is why you see it in the names like Mojave Air and Spaceport, Colorado Air and Spaceport, so you can absolutely have both. And it's something you apply for, and there's different types of, like, there's only one commercial spaceport on the West Coast. It's out in Mojave, so there's opportunities that we have between Silicon Valley.
With a real garden spot.
Mojave, yeah, absolutely. It's a great place there. But though we have up in Silicon Valley is a high concentration of space technology, and I think that's the bumper music.
Yeah, it is the bumper music. All right, when we come back, I want you to unpack what's planned for the spaceport, and we're going to have rockets going up in the air. I know it's going to be horizontal lift.
That's 4th of July.
That's 4th of July. All right, folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so stand by.
If you ever have an accident, just where do you take your vehicle for top-notch repair? I could tell you, but isn't it better to hear from past Davis Body Shop customers? Here's what Kim M. from Atascadero had to say.
What an amazing team. I could not have asked for better service, and my car looked as good as new when they were finished. Patrick took care of me from day one, always keeping me updated about the process and their speedy timeline. I highly recommend them to all my friends and family. Excellent job.
Scott from Atascadero had this to say.
Great body shop. I was hit by another vehicle and took my truck to Davis. The work was done over a month ago and the repair work still looks great. No hidden problems. The truck left Davis in better condition than before the accident. Thanks to Tim and Patrick for all the extra work. It's really appreciated.
And that's why Davis Body Shop is the largest auto body collision specialist in San Luis Obispo County with two locations. On El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Chris Bosch, City of Paso Robles District 2 Councilman, and Paul Sloan, City of Paso Robles Economic Development Manager. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775-238-KPRL. So, Paul, let's unpack. What is the spaceport proposed going to look like?
Sure. Well, a spaceport is just a license for existing infrastructure.
Okay.
So we're literally not building anything at all. And despite people make things up, we're not building anything, we're not extending the runway, we're not, so it's a piece of paper. It's a really cool piece of paper, but that's basically what it is. And we're doing dual track. One is getting the license, and the other is what we're calling our technology corridor.
Okay.
And we've already started working on that with our testing stands. So if you go on Google Maps and look, you can see in very remote parts of the airport, there's these cement pads where they used to park bombers in World War II. These are parts of the airport that have not been used in a very long time. Mm. And they're all spread out so bombers couldn't be attacked, you know, whatever.
Right.
And we set up our first test stand where companies, aerospace engineering firms, can test micropropulsion systems that are used on satellites. And our first tenant out there was a company that literally created the propulsion system for the NASA Capstone project that's been orbiting the moon since November of 23. And they're out there testing now as part of the Artemis project. So we today have 3 engineering firms plus Cal Poly students using it. The testing site is booked out 3 months in advance. We're building a second one. And it just means using another one of those World War II concrete pads and setting up some stuff for them. But basically, our spaceport plans, different from all the other ones in the U.S., is our focus on education and workforce development. So no one else is doing that. And so with our academic partners, Cal Poly, Cuesta, and local school districts, It's a chance to train locally for jobs and try and give people the chance, and that will attract the businesses, which are already happening, for people to be able to stay here. What people don't realize is that in the space sector, the technician, not there's a lot of jobs that don't require a four-year degree. Technician level workers are super needed. Mm-hmm. Three that most in-demand trades are welding, machinists, and maintenance technicians.
Okay. We got a caller. What's your question for Paul and Chris?
Okay, Paul. How much longer do you think before we can get an approval for the spaceport?
Sure.
Thanks for the question.
So in March, we did a joint session of council, airport commission, and planning commission, and that was a bookend to a joint session we did in 2022 when we kind of kicked off the whole thing. We'd done a feasibility study back then, which showed we could do it, mm-hmm. and this was bringing all of the work that we've done over the last few years together with the three bodies, and the council unanimously authorized us to go forward. So there's a number of steps to get the license. We've completed most of them, but there are a few left that require very specialized consulting agencies. And the last few steps are very expensive. That's just how it is. We use students, interns, and things to keep costs down to this point, but we're going to have to pay the money for these things.
So this is a cost to the city.
It's a cost to the city. And so we're going out to RFP is what council authorized. We'll be probably sending it out within the next couple of weeks. And then when the offers come back in, proposals will go to council. And at that point, it's literally a funding question. We've done the studies. We know what we can get from here to there. The FAA says it's something we can do. And we know the economic returns and impacts and all the other things. So it'll be really is, do we want to pay for it? And that's sort of the next step. And if we get the green light from council, then it's 12 to 18 months from that point until we actually have the license.
So this is the work that RSNH is doing? They're kind of like airport builders, I guess.
Yeah, they do a lot of infrastructure things, but they also work a lot of spaceports around the world. We've used them for two things. One, they went back and looked at all the things we've been working on over the last 5 years, because we used a lot of different consultants and students and things to take all of our homework and put it in one thing to see how are we against the requirements for license. And that's what was presented to council, just so we know where we are and how to get to the finish line. And the other thing that they did was when you're building test sites, you have to do something called an explosive site plan, which is basically putting a ring of safety around where you're doing things like that. And we worked with RSNH to update the airport's explosive site plan. That shows you where you store fuels and things like that. And so at this moment, we're not working with them. But they will likely respond to, there's about four or five companies that are interested, and they'll likely respond, because that's one of the things they do is do licensing.
So are there any other risk factors that, you know, need to be considered, potential explosion, environmental, anything like that?
So an important part about the whole thing is that 90% of the economic activity on a spaceport has nothing to do with launches. Mm-hmm. It's research and development, it's testing, it's advanced manufacturing, it's payload processing, which is basically prepping things to be taken to Vandenberg for launch, which people have told us we should do here, because right now they're doing a lot of that in LA and trucking it up to Vandenberg, and we're mm-hmm. a lot closer. And so we see that as, on the academic side, working with our academic institutions, training people, and then as well as being a place for testing and R&D. And so that's, nothing flies around with that. So, and also getting a spaceport license means it's a place we can host those types of activities. Again, horizontal launch. But it doesn't authorize any launches. So if any company that's a launch company wants to come here, they have to apply for their own launch license from the FAA and go through all their environmental and safety things. So we are just getting a license that says this is a place where those types of activities can happen. But anyone wants to do it has to go through their own license.
Oh, and that's something they do with the FAA.
They do it themselves, and that's all there.
And in the short run, I mean, the people that are coming up here are kind of, I'll use the word part-time or type employees that, come and stay at the hotels, yep. eat at restaurants. But it's at some point, there's probably going to be some sort of permanent workforce here, right?
We already have the first company bought a building 2 months ago. And in about 30 to 60 days, we'll be announcing another one that's going to be hiring very good jobs here in Paso.
We want to talk about that the other side of the break. Folks, we'll be back with Paul Sloan and Chris Bosch talking about the airport and other pressing issues in Paso Robles. So stand by.
us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's